Dominic Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Studios at the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament here, Bridgestone Arena, inside the BetMGM Sports Lounge, Restaurant, and Bar. Again, this place, we were here when it opened. This place, you can come on in every day. You know, it is the downtown sports watching headquarters. Ian, I've got all these games in front of me right now. It's going to be really, really hard for me to stay focused today to actually coach. I mean, coach. See, that's what I'm talking about.
Already.
To host the show, we got Rick Pitino over here coaching against, he was the big coach a couple years ago, and now he's at Seton Hall. I can't remember. You know, one of those Scarbini schools, and they got to, like, the Elite Eight. You know who I'm talking about, right?
I think so, but I can't remember his name.
They were the Peacocks, and they beat Kentucky in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. I
forget. St. Peter's.
Well, he's at Seton Hall.
St. Peter's.
That's it. Yes, St. Peter's. Okay, so we are here today and really excited for the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament here on Stillman & Company. We will get to the Titans because, yes, the Titans made the big move yesterday on Calvin Ridley, which we talked about as it happened, but we will get in because I've thought, now that I've been off the air, I've thought, you know, even more about what it means and what it doesn't. And TD, of course, will join us at 3 o'clock as TD always does on a Thursday for the Power Hour. But I want to start with the news today that was reported by many outlets, and that is that Jerry Stackhouse is out at Vanderbilt after their loss last night. They had a big lead against Arkansas, which the Vanderbilt-Arkansas thing over the last handful of years, I've never really been able to explain it. But for some reason, Jerry Stackhouse has some kind of kryptonite with Eric Musselman, and it didn't work last night. They lost in overtime, and today Vanderbilt made it official. Or I guess they haven't made it official yet, but Vanderbilt has decided to move on from Jerry Stackhouse. So I have a couple of thoughts on this. The first thing is, number one, Stackhouse had to go. Before I got started, when I sat down here at the BetMGM Lounge, I turned to Caroline and I said, I think I'm going to start on Stackhouse today. What do you think? And the reason that I asked that question is obviously Caroline's just been hosting the show for the last 3 hours. And so she's got a vibe as to what people are talking about, what people are responding to, what people want to. And she was like, well, she's like, when we talk Titans, I mean, it was loading up. We talked Stackhouse, the response, it didn't feel that strong. And when I heard that, that was when I decided I was going to start on Jerry Stackhouse. And here's why. Because it's a shame that the news of Vanderbilt changing their basketball coach doesn't register much in town. Now, I get it. The NFL is the NFL. And when you're talking about signing the top receiver, free agent on the market, and it's a Calvin Ridley and the team, you know, in turmoil for all these years with all these management changes. I mean, that's a big deal. I get it. You know, finally they're spending money and there's a draft coming up, and I get it. The Predators don't lose games anymore and people love winners. So I get that. But the reason why Vanderbilt has fallen out of favor in town, Vanderbilt basketball, that is because they're irrelevant. And that's just not acceptable for that program. The reality is, if you've moved to town over the last 6 or 7 years, which a boatload of you have moved from out of town over the last decade, you probably look at Vanderbilt basketball the same way that you look at Vanderbilt football. And that's a problem. I don't want to be the guy who's, you know, back in my day when I was growing up in Nashville, but I am going to say this. When I was a kid and the NFL wasn't a 365 news cycle with its own television network and insiders to tell you all the transactions and everything else, when football season was over, we went to basketball season, and specifically Vandy basketball. And Vandy wasn't great. Vandy wasn't Kentucky. I mean, with Kevin Stallings, it was like they made the tournament once every 3-4 years. But every year it was a war in the Southeastern Conference with teams like Tennessee and Kentucky, and Florida had won back-to-back titles, and Bruce Pearl was at UT. I mean, it was, it wasn't just a local thing. Like, it was a national thing at times. And it's just slowly but surely completely fallen off the edge. I've done shows where we would have loaded phone lines to talk about Vandy basketball before. I don't think we can get that now. I don't think we'll get loaded phone lines today to talk Jerry Stackhouse. And I'm not even looking for loaded phone lines today to talk about Jerry Stackhouse. This is just the reality of where Vandy basketball is. And I totally believe everything that's been said by Gentry Estes and Robbie Weinstein. And I totally believe that when it comes to Jerry Stackhouse and it comes to Vanderbilt and it comes to Candace Lee and what she did or what she didn't do, I completely believe that she legitimately thought that there would be a chance to keep Stackhouse because he was a good coach. But there wasn't. There wasn't. She didn't have a choice. Empty arenas, nobody in town talking about you. It was never going to work. There was never going to be a way to bring him back. Last night after the game was over, Jerry Stackhouse had what I thought was his best press conference at Vanderbilt. He showed a lot of humility and grace. It was pretty obvious listening to it that he knew that he was on his way out. It was almost like a goodbye press conference. Oftentimes in sports, you don't get a goodbye press conference. Oftentimes in sports radio, you don't get a goodbye show. You get called into the office, your show's over at 9 a.m., you get called into the office, and they tell you, thanks, we'll see you. That's the reality of how this all works. So when Stackhouse met with the media yesterday after the game was over, there was no talk about Jesus and Judas. There was no pushing back on narratives. It was almost like he accepted responsibility for his mistakes as the coach here at Vandy. Max Hurst said it to me earlier today. He said Stackhouse admitting that the streak was a big deal to the fans and him blowing it off was a mistake. And what I realized listening to that press conference was something that I kind of already believed when it had come to Vandy basketball, which is it's not about the best basketball coach to be able to win here. It's about the right basketball coach to win here that understands Vanderbilt, understands the SEC, and understands the city of Nashville. And it's not Jerry Stackhouse's fault when three-month-old athletic director Malcolm Turner, who was an unmitigated disaster, barely lasted a year as AD, hired him from the NBA's G League. He wasn't ready for that. He had no college basketball experience. He wasn't ready for how college basketball is different from NBA basketball. He wasn't ready for how Vanderbilt is different than all the other schools in college basketball. And it's different than all the other schools in the SEC. And he wasn't ready for the fact that the city of Nashville was different than every other city. For instance, if you're the head coach at Mississippi State and you're good, everybody in Starkville, Mississippi cares. Everybody in Starkville, Mississippi is going to the games. Everybody wants tickets. Everybody at Vandy, you're not the most popular school in your own city. And I think over the years, Jerry Stackhouse learned some of that. But this is not a job where you can come in and on your first impression, not really understand the culture that you're getting yourself into and not be able to kiss the babies and adapt to the fans and do the things that are necessary in order to make a program that has its issues relevant in a city where, quite frankly, there's just too much to do. And so now Vandy turns the page, and they had to. Joe Rex Rhodes says they're armed with all this NIL money. Who knows where they're getting it from? But if that's the case, then I think that Vanderbilt has a chance, if they get this hire right, to restore their spot in the city. Vandy basketball, Vandy football, and I love Clark Lee, and I mean, he's on the hot seat this year. I think we can all agree. But Vandy football's always going to have its issues. It's never truly going to be able to compete with the SEC year in and year out. Vandy basketball is not the same, especially if Vandy basketball's got the NIL money. Now, it's not going to be the same as the other schools. The other schools are pretty much pro teams now, and it's just like, hey, here's $250,000, come play point guard. It doesn't work like that, because at Vandy, you still have to get into the school. But Vanderbilt basketball has shown over the years it has the potential to be good. I truly believe, and maybe I'm wrong about this, because I don't know the specific academic standards that are required to be able to coach at Vandy. I think it has the potential to be a great job. Like, I think it can be a Villanova type job. I really do. I think it could be like Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame, you know, Mike Bray, they weren't in the Final Four, but they always had competitive teams. I think in great conferences like the ACC and the Big East, I think Vandy can be that. I went to that game in 2008 when number one Tennessee came in after having just beaten John Calipari in Memphis, and they came into Memorial Gym, and there was not a seat to be had. There was not a ticket. You couldn't get a ticket on the secondary market for that game. And Shane Foster and Vanderbilt beat Tennessee, and the city was on fire because it was, what side are you on? That is possible. But Vanderbilt has to get the right guy. And the right guy, and this is not Jerry Stackhouse's fault, because I don't think Jerry Stackhouse was trained. No, he was, again, NBA player, NBA assistant coach, NBA G League coach. But whoever gets this job has to understand college basketball, which Jerry Stackhouse, I don't think, knew when he took the job, because it's not just coaching basketball. It's coaching college basketball and the idiosyncrasies of how you get kids in college basketball and AAU pipelines and official visits and high schools. And it's just different. It's just totally different. And so between that and between the fact that Nashville is a different city, and Vanderbilt is different than every school in the SEC and maybe different than every school in college basketball, if you understand that, I think you can make this pretty special. I really, again, walked away from Jerry Stackhouse's press conference last night thinking that's the best press conference he did. That's the most relatable. That was the most humble press conference. And I wondered why he wasn't that way more often when he was the coach. But by last night, it was too late. So this next hire for Candace Lee, this is going to be what either saves or tanks the program. And it's a big one. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We are in the BetMGM Sports Lounge restaurant and bar out here at Bridgestone Arena. Of course, the SEC men's basketball tournament is rocking and rolling. We will get to some of your phones, 615-737-1025. But on to the Titans. And I have a take on the Calvin Ridley signing that it was funny because I told Derek as he was passing off. I have a theory on the Calvin Ridley signing that may solve another issue at another position. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to weigh in. Again, that phone number is 615-737-1025. And in the first hour, we'll kind of hit all of everything, and we'll get your phones in on everything as well. And TD at 3 o'clock. Stillman & Company, live from the BetMGM Sports Lounge and Restaurant and Bar, 1025-1063 The Game.
Well, I mean, what this may mean for Treylon Burks, and I think now he has to find his space. He has to find his place within the rotation.
He has to create his space in this rotation.
Create it, find it, take it, whatever it is. He has to. It's no longer a given. When you are drafted in the first round, as high as he was, it's a given. You are going to be in the lineup if you show anything, especially how everything happened. Trading away one guy, drafting him. You just assume that you're going into a situation where if you're not the number one, you're the number two. So there was a place created for you already. Well, you know, Traylon's in a position now with them going to get D-Hop last year, them getting Calvin this year, signing Nick Westbrook-Ikhine back, We figure they may go out and get another receiver. They still got Kyle Phillips on the on the roster. He has to take a position. He has to create his own, sort of lane.
There you go. That was Derek earlier today talking about Treylon Burks. And so yesterday the Titans acquired Calvin Ridley. And after they acquired Calvin Ridley, I wondered, okay, what does that do for the 38th pick, where I feel like they're for sure going to go wide receiver, and now maybe I don't feel that way. And then I woke up this morning to more Titans news. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine returning on a one-year deal. No details mentioned, which makes me think that it's probably one of those league minimum deals. I think Westbrook-Ikhine was a 1-2 guy last year. He's probably 1.3, 1.2, something like that. And when I woke up this morning, I thought to myself, they're going to trade Treylon Burks. I think that with the addition of Calvin Ridley, the Titans, we keep wondering, okay, well, what's this mean for Burks? I've seen people that are putting it out there on Twitter. They're saying, oh, my God, think about this offense. Levis, Spears, Pollard, Hopkins, Ridley, Chig, Burks. I don't think Burks is going to be a part of this offense. And I'm going to tell you why. Because as soon as Calvin Ridley signed, that was a big domino. And all of a sudden, there were a lot of other signings around the league, including one like Jonah Williams, the not-so-good tackle from Cincinnati, turned around and signed almost immediately with Arizona. And I wonder if the Titans had irons in the fire in other spots that, hey, if it doesn't work out with Ridley and we have a lot more money to spend since we don't have that $50 million we're about to guarantee Calvin Ridley, then we'll go do X, Y, Z. And then once Ridley, they got the deal done, it was like, well, we can't do that, we can't do that, we can't do that. Diana Russini had a report that the Titans are looking at some safety. I can't remember who it was, but it certainly wasn't Justin Simmons. And somebody asked Diana on Twitter and they said, well, what about Justin Simmons? Why are they not targeting him anymore? As she had previously reported, and she replied back with the dollar sign, aka the money. Simmons probably wants more money than they can pay because they've given it to Ridley. Which takes me back to Burks. Brian Callahan said at the combine that this was going to be a deep wide receiver draft. And he said that they hoped that they would get a couple of wide receivers in this draft. Now, I think the Titans have lied plenty, and I don't have a problem with that. I think they lied when they went to the combine and they said, oh no, we've got to spend wisely. We're not going to spend it all in one place. We're not going, because they've come out in free agency and they have dropped the hammer. I mean, even last week, TD was talking about, hey, they're going to spend wisely. Like, they're going to be careful. Like, that's what the Titans were telling, was that's what they told everybody. And then they came out in free agency and they have just been dropping the money truck to everybody, it feels like. So that takes me back to Burks. I don't think Brian Callahan was lying about wanting to add a receiver or two in this draft. Well, you can't have a bunch of receivers on your roster that don't play special teams that are active on game day, right? Hopkins will be active on game day and he'll be on the roster. Ridley will be active on game day. He'll be on the roster. If you draft a receiver, they will be active on the game on game day, on the roster, and they probably will not be playing special teams. Right? Now, if you draft a guy in the seventh round and he's a gunner, that's different. Now, Westbrook-Ikhine doesn't play a lot of special teams, but he did used to play special teams, and I do think he'll probably play special teams now. When Colton Dowell returns, if he stays on the team, he'll play special teams. But Burks doesn't play special teams. So how many receivers can I have on the roster that don't play special teams? And when it comes again to Burks, the question is this. Where does he fit in? He's not a slot receiver. Neither is Ridley. Neither is DeAndre. They can play in the slot, but they're not slot receivers. They're not Wes Welker. So do you put that into a spot that he doesn't necessarily fit? Or do you just say, hey, We got 2 years left on Treylon Burks' contract. If we turn around and sell him to the league and we end up getting in return a fifth round pick, we get 4 years of a potential player, possibly a receiver, but we get 4 years of contractual control as opposed to the 2 years that are left with Burks, when again, Burks might not have a spot. And I don't know what the market for Treylon Burks is going to be. You know, normally when a team trades away a guy who is a first round pick who they don't want anymore because the guy's kind of a bust, which I hate to say it, Treylon Burks, kind of a bust. When that happens, it's usually in the third to sixth range, right? Like Kadarius Toney was a third round pick. A lot of these guys, Jerry Jeudy just went for a fifth and a sixth round pick. So Burks is probably in that neighborhood somewhere here, somewhere there. So my gut tells me that they're probably going to trade him. And that what that'll do is, let's say they get a fifth round pick, right? That pick doesn't necessarily need to be a receiver, but it gives the Titans the option to draft a receiver in this draft, but also draft something else. So it's not like, okay, if we use our fourth round pick on a receiver, now we're down to three. No, you got the extra pick, and that's going to be Burks. So the signing of Ridley, yes, I think it's an upgrade, Ridley to Burks. But I think this is a sign that for many people that are saying, hey, let's see if Treylon Burks can rebound, or, oh, it was bad luck for Treylon Burks when it came to injuries and everything else. I think the Titans are going to move on. And maybe if they don't get any offers for Burks, which I'd be shocked by, maybe they keep him. But I'll tell you right now, when I saw Westbrook Akine resign, I'm like, they're going to trade Burks. So don't be surprised if that happens. And don't be surprised if that happens either. It's got to happen before the draft so that you can get that pick. But I'm not telling you, like, it's not inside source information or anything like that. And I think there's a chance. It's not something I would bank on. I think there's a chance that Treylon Burks ends up making it and ends up having a career because he's got so much talent. But I don't think the Titans are banking on it. I think the Titans have decided they're going in a different direction. And when they signed Ridley, it kind of took that spot. And then when they signed Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, kind of said, there's too many people in that room right now. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. A bunch of people, by the way, are just hammering the Titans for overpaying Calvin Ridley. And I have one thought on that, which we'll get to next. Stillman and Company, we're live at the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament at the BetMGM Sports Lounge Restaurant and Bar. That's right, right here on our program. And be sure to join us tomorrow, along with our friends at Guinness, for Pinewood Madness Patio SEC Watch Party. 102.5 The Game will be broadcasting live from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. So stop by and enter for your chance to win tickets to see Green Day. Showcase your skills in Pinewood Social's arcade basketball game competition. Win tournament tickets and watch all the televised games on their jumbo LED screen. For more details, visit thegamenational.com/events.
So this is what I'm talking about. All due respect to Greg Bedard, who was coming in here and told us earlier that the Patriots have a very aggressive offer on the table for Calvin Ridley. The very aggressive offer on the table for Calvin Ridley, but his reasons for returning to the Jaguars are personal, like family reason or something like this. So Calvin Ridley then responds by going to Tennessee.
It's kind of close to Florida.
Closer.
Yeah, I guess.
So's Cuba.
They don't have a quarterback either. Tennessee.
They kind of suck too.
Well, mm-hmm. They just signed Mason Rudolph. So
and they have no quarterback.
Yeah.
So riddle me this. How do they get the player?
Money. They also signed Tony Pollard.
Oh, I'd so much rather be the Tennessee Titans. I feel like there's just more to look at there.
In Boston yesterday, reacting to the news that the Patriots got outbid for Calvin Ridley. So I was listening yesterday to kind of all the reaction of everybody else because I was on the air just bitching about the Mason Rudolph signing, which I'm still against. And I was just going crazy. And then all of a sudden the Calvin Ridley signing came down and it was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Holy crap. They just signed the top receiver on the market to top of the market money. And last night on social media, there was this weird discussion or defense or whatever you want to call it about the Titans and Oh, they overpaid for Calvin Ridley. Or, oh, if they had only paid A.J. Brown the money that they paid Calvin Ridley. First off, no, duh. The A.J. Brown thing was a mistake. But I've talked to enough people within the Titans that, and this wasn't just a John Robinson decision, by the way. This was an Amy Adams Strunk decision on the A.J. Brown trade, that it was as much personal, the way A.J. had handled his contract and everything else, as it was the money. Now, let's not rehash that because that's over. It's move on. And by the way, A.J. seems to be causing some problems right now in Philadelphia. But again, that's a different discussion. But the narrative was the Titans overpaid. I mean, they paid $25 million. I guess it's 23 technically because it's a four-year deal. But I look at it as 2 years, $50 million guaranteed. That's $25 million. They overpaid. Did they? I think APY, this comes in as like ninth in the NFL. But then Justin Jefferson will sign his contract. Jamar Chase will sign his contract. T. Higgins will get traded and sign a contract. And then Ridley will be somewhere around, what, 11th, 12th, 13th. And that's probably about where he sits. But here's why I don't care about this whole discussion of whether or not the Titans overpaid. Because they did. That's how bad teams get players. You overpay. If the money is equal and you don't have Tom Brady as quarterback, you don't get the player. The only way to get the player is to pay the guy so much money that he literally cannot say, well, I like my old team. I like my old house. My wife likes it there. I like the quarterback. I like the coach. It's here's so much money that this team might suck and this quarterback might be horrible and you might be miserable, but you'll have so much money that it will not matter. Here, signing. That's how you get players in this league. How do you think the Jacksonville Jags got Christian Kirk? They paid for him. How do you think the Houston Texans went out and got Jimmy Ward last year? Do you think Jimmy Ward wanted to leave the San Francisco 49ers and go to the Houston Texans? No, they paid for him. That's how this league works. So I don't, this whole idea about, oh my God, you know, the Titans overpaid. Of course they overpaid. This is the NFL. And nobody just wants to go to the Tennessee Titans coming off a mediocre 7-win season. So what did you think? And so this whole idea of did they overpay, did they not? Of course they overpaid. Everybody overpays. It's free agency. Everybody overpays. You don't get an award for the best value signed free agent contracts. So I don't care that they overpay. I'm glad that they overpay. I'm glad that they're willing to say, hey, we need a receiver. Go buy the receiver. Work for Jacksonville. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, if you want to weigh in here on the program. Like I said earlier, I think they're going to trade Treylon Burks. Texture says, Jared, if you're the GM and you offer Burks to Kansas City for Snead, do you think they would buy it or do you think they would need more? So we had a caller call in last week and asked me about Burks for Snead. And I said no. And then that caller called TD. I guess he was mad at me. It was like when I would ask one parent for something, they would say no. Then they'd go to the other parent. They called TD and we said no. Burks for Snead is not an option. Now, could Burks be in a contract for Snead or in a trade for Snead? Maybe. But Burks's value is probably anywhere between a fourth and a sixth round pick. So if it's between a fourth and a sixth round pick, it's probably a fifth round pick. Okay, they're not trading Calvin Ridley they're not trading Legarius Snead for a fifth round pick. My words have been all over the place today. I think it's because I'm out here at this BetMGM Sports Lounge and there's all these games and all these people walking in front of me. So I apologize for that. But they're not trading Legarius Snead, in my opinion. They're not trading Legarius Snead for a pick next year, and unless it's like a first, and they're not trading Legarius Snead straight up for a guy you don't want. But could the guy you don't want that's got a value of a fifth-round pick, could he be something maybe as part of that package? Potentially. Let's go to Michael, who's up next here on our program, 615-737-1025. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Another argument that I saw about the whole Calvin Ridley signing yesterday, specifically from one of my buddies who's a Panthers fan, so take this with a grain of salt, but he was like, well, good teams don't build through free agency. So, well, what do you expect us to do? Like, we don't have very many weapons. We can't just only rely on the draft. If the Titans had done literally nothing in free agency, we would be rightfully lambasting them for not making any moves. Like, you have to at some point sign some free agents, whether you like it or not, whether you think that you overpay them or not. You have to do something in free agency, because how else are you going to get any good players? You can't solely rely on drafting them.
Agreed. So I agree. This idea that, like, free agency doesn't matter is ridiculous. Now, I will argue this. You're not going to build a Super Bowl winner based off of just signing players in free agency. That is true. Like, you have to draft good players. Duh. Like, I mean, what are we talking about here? Like, we know that the draft is important. We know the draft's coming up. That's why I said today, you know, I brought up the fact the Titans don't have a right tackle. And, you know, people are like, well, we got the draft, Jarrett. Right. And that's where you're getting your left tackle. You're getting your left tackle in the draft. We all know that. It's not, I mean, at this point, it's not even a secret. It's obvious. You're going to use the seventh pick, and you're going to get a tackle. And you need the tackle to be good. But I remember when the Titans were 3-13 in 2015. And the next year, they won 9 games. And the best player on that team in 2016 was DeMarco Murray, who, while it technically was a trade with the Eagles, the Titans basically signed as a free agent. So if you want to go from bad to decent, the way the Texans did, the way the Jags did, you have to sign free agents. That's the point. And here's why the bad teams in the NFL always have the most cap space. Because if you've got bad players on your team, you cut them. If you've got bad players on your team that you drafted, you don't extend them. So instead of giving all your money to guys you've already drafted, you don't have anybody to do that with, you give your money to free agents. That's one. So this idea of, like, oh, you can't build your team through free agency. Is anybody talking about the Super Bowl right now? I'm not talking about the Super Bowl. I mean, I'm talking about building a team that can compete next year with Jacksonville and Houston and Indianapolis and going from there. But I mean, the whole key to all of this, I mean, Ian, what have I said is the key to the season? It's not the Super Bowl.
Levis.
It's not making the playoffs. It's developing the quarterback. And if the quarterback pops and becomes a superstar, then you will be perennially a competitor inside the AFC. And if the quarterback doesn't pop, you'll win 4 games. And this time next year, we'll be talking about Shedeur Sanders and Quinn Ewers and all those other guys that they may draft to be the next quarterback of this team. More of your phone, 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025, live from the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament at the BetMGM Sports Lounge, Restaurant, and Bar here at Bridgestone Arena. And I got to tell you, I know we came here when this place opened, but this place is freaking awesome. You know, they've got right in front of me, I'm kind of up in like the up above, like the kind of the party area here. And we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 16 TVs right in front of me. I mean, you got bars everywhere here. The food, I got the menu right in front of me. Let's see what we got here. I haven't actually eaten here before. I bet it's fabulous. Ooh, they got the Smashville burger, the double Smashville burger, the chicken wings. So they got it all here. Hey, by the way, tune in right here, 1025, 106 through the game for updates on the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament this week, presented by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Toyota, and Guinness. I am convinced after talking to you that right tackle is not a need for the Titans. If we were the Titans and we were talking about this, would we look at right tackle as a need, or would we say, okay, let's go with Petit Frere, or let's go with Raidens and go from there?
it's not a desperate need, not anymore if they get Joe Alt or somebody like that at left tackle. Keep in mind, they could draft a right tackle. I mean, J.C. Latham, the right tackle out of Alabama, is moving up the draft boards, and a lot of people have him mocked to the Chargers just above the Titans. And even though he's a right tackle, they may end up taking him anyhow and solidify that position and get some chewing gum and MacGyvering to fix left tackle for a while. But right tackle to me is not a desperate position. To me, defensive line is more of a desperate position right now because, you know, they're going to need some young guys to roll in the rotation or else that defense is just going to get exhausted by the fourth quarter and the offense is going to be in desperate throwing mode all the time.
There you go. That was Trevor on our show earlier this week. Does Trevor not have faith in TK McClendon and Quentin Bohanna? And I don't remember his first name, but Coburn? I mean, does Trevor not have faith in those guys? So there is some breaking news that I hate to tell you about, which is that DJ Reader, the big defensive tackle from Cincinnati, has signed with the Detroit Lions on a 2-year deal. And I know everybody wants to get excited about the signings that they have made, and I am excited about the fact that the Titans have gone out into free agency and they have spent at center and they have spent now at wide receiver. And like running back, I mean, don't necessarily think it was the biggest thing in the world to address right away, but I don't dislike Tony Pollard, and I always felt like they needed a second running back to go with Spears anyways. So I'm fine with that. And maybe Kenneth Murray's good, and I hope they end up signing Jerome Baker and Chidobe Awuzie. Like, he's a legitimate corner in the NFL. Good, 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 good. But I'm worried about the defensive line because I'm not going to sit here and tell you that you can't replace Denico Autry. Because you can replace Denico Autry. But you can't just replace Denico Autry with some practice squad Scarbini. You can't do that. It has to be a legitimate NFL player. In the case of Reader, he is a legitimate NFL nose tackle that they stick in there and they say, all right, big boy, you eat up two offensive linemen and then let Jeffrey Simmons kind of take care of the rest. You can do that with him. What I'm worried about is I'm worried that the Titans are going to try to get Chase Young to be that guy. They're bringing him in on a visit. And then when they sign Chase Young to a 1-year, $7 million contract or whatever that may be, when they end up doing that, then they're going to say like, oh, no, no, no. Chase Young's got all the talent. We think he'll fit. We've got the system. That worries me. I mean, I want a real, legitimate, big boy defensive lineman. That, again, doesn't have to be a pro bowler, doesn't have to be an all-pro. But Autry's a good player now. Like, you don't just replace Denico Autry with nobody. He's not impossible, but you do replace him. Like Malik Collins, who just officially got traded to the 49ers. That is the kind of guy I'm talking about that can come in here and replace him. But he's going to be a real player. Ian Rappaport says the Reader contract is a 2-year deal worth... Ian? Up to $27.25 million over $9 million guaranteed. So my guess is that it's probably a 2-year, $20 million contract, and he's getting the first year guaranteed. And then the rest, you know, if he makes the Pro Bowl, if he's an All-Pro, if he's this, if he's that, then go ahead and add to it. But I'm fairly certain that's probably what we're looking at. 615-737-1025. One texter says, Jared is a Titan fan. I am annoyed. I am annoyed by Titan fans that do not get the Ridley contract. They fail to understand that the team's roster is so horrible, and the only way to get decent players to come to a bad roster is to overpay in free agency to a degree. The second thing is the media keeps bringing up how the Titans didn't pay A.J. Brown, but they paid Calvin Ridley, and it's almost as if they forget that John Robinson was fired and that the Titans have a new general manager. This comes from Pat. So, Pat, here would be my response on the Titans fans overpaying Ridley front. That's always how it's going to be. I remember the first day of free agency, Barry Trotz signed Ryan O'Reilly, and the Predators fans were furious about 4 years. He's like 32 years old. It's like, right. And if you offered the same contract that everybody else was offering Ryan O'Reilly, then Ryan O'Reilly wouldn't be a Predator. And that's the same with Calvin Ridley. If you offered Calvin Ridley the same contract that the 49ers would offer him, he's going to pick the 49ers. So you have to offer more. On the A.J. Brown-Ridley front, I think there are three things here in place. Number one, it was a mistake to not pay A.J. Brown. Number two, I think in both cases, there is actually one similarity that doesn't get talked about, and that is in both cases, the agents won. In the case of A.J. Brown, Tory Dandy, the agent, turned A.J. against the Titans in order to create leverage, which led to the deal in Philadelphia, and the Titans took the bait. He did the same thing with Deebo Samuel in San Francisco, and San Francisco didn't take the bait. And in this case, David Mulugeta, the agent for Calvin Ridley, took the Titans and the Patriots, and quite frankly, they were probably trying to leverage Jacksonville. But then once you get such a big offer, because the Titans are, we can't let this guy get away, now you've won. So I think that's actually more similar than it is different. And who knows what would be different if A.J. Brown had stayed with the Titans. But also remember this. It was Amy Adams Strunk that pushed through that A.J. Brown trade. And the Titans will tell you that right now. I mean, that it was Amy that pushed through that trade. Now, it was John's decision, but Amy was 100% on board. Just like I'm sure Amy's 100% on board for this. One texter says, quit worrying, Jared. You've been worried about everything since Vrabel got fired, and thus, Ran has made all good moves, except Mason Rudolph, the texter says. He's going to keep cooking and turn this team around. Hide and watch. First of all, I am always going to worry. That's what I do. Secondly, they don't have a defensive line. Again, Jeffrey Simmons, T.K. McClendon, Quentin Bohanna, and Coburn. That's who's on the defensive line. That's one guy. And then secondly, do I have to tell the right tackle story, Ian?
Which one? The right tackle?
Yes.
I hope not.
Well, he says quit worrying. Well, guess what? You don't have a right tackle. TD joins us next. His reaction to the free agent moves the Titans have made. TD for the TD Power Hour. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3. The game, FanDuel Sportsbook. That's my official sportsbook app. And FanDuel is putting the ball in your court for the rest of the NBA season. Because right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $200 if your bet wins. Bet on the NBA with a wide range of bet types like quick bets, live same game parlays, player props, and more. So visit FanDuel.com/JGM and make your first bet a layup. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NBA. 21 and over and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager, only $10 first deposit required. Bonus issue is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.